Chat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive on mic. Just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd. No, we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby. I'm here with my co-host, DB Schwartz. How's it going, man?
It's going good, man. Things were happening around here recently, locally. I mean, I think you should share the helicopter story, but you know what the crazy thing was when I was on the way here, there was a cop right behind me that freaked me out, dude. He came up behind me and I was like, what is going on? And then he started doing the flashing light going back and forth across the highway right behind me. And I was like, what the hell? What am I driving into here? You know what I mean? This is not good news if he's right behind me. But then I pulled off and I got over here and everything, but man, can we say the Dear Police State is popping off?
You survived. At least you survived it.
Yes.
At least you didn't get your head caved in by one of these cops or anything like that.
Very true.
You know, I don't know, man. It's just like this. All this stuff is like piling on with this whole police state stuff at the local level. I was in the car for like 5 minutes. I switched off from my music real quick to see who was on the radio, and I just happened to hear Glenn Beck start talking about the militarization of the local police forces. So luckily this stuff's starting to go mainstream. You know, if Glenn Beck's talking about it, that means all the sheeple that listen to him are finally starting to realize, oh, damn, maybe we shouldn't be militarizing all of our little small-town local police with tanks and yeah. Militarized weaponry. So, I mean, we had one instance here, right here in Chula Vista, like right down the street from my house, where this cop, CHP arrests this firefighter, I guess.
Yeah, I mean.
Which, I mean, it's just like, I don't know. Yeah. I think the firefighter was like in the middle of trying to save somebody.
Yeah, this is the messed up part. It was like some guy rolled off an embankment, and he was injured, and they had three engines respond. And they all pulled off, you know, onto the side of the road, but one was in the fast lane because he was the first responder. He didn't pull over. He got out. He started giving aid to this guy. And the CHP comes up and goes, hey, I need you to move your vehicle. You're blocking the fast lane. The guy's like, I'm actually helping a guy who's injured right now. No. And the guy's like, put your hands behind your back. So they arrested this guy. They arrested a firefighter in the middle of helping a person who was on the scene of an accident, put his hands behind his back, put him in the back of a squad car for 30 minutes until they realized what a horrible PR nightmare this is going to become. But the damage is done. And we started to talk about it. Remember how we were talking, like, if we can't be saved anymore because the police are arresting our first responders who are coming to the scene of an accident, like, they really, really don't care about us anymore. They really want us to get hurt and die, dude. It's just better for them.
Well, here's what I'm saying, man. Like, if they can arrest these firefighters, which, I mean, in my opinion, firefighting is, like, a really honorable job. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And you don't see firefighters going around killing people or, you know, these guys more or less save people out of burning houses. And for the cops to be arresting these guys, I mean, at least to me, it's like, you know, if they can arrest firefighters, they can arrest these dudes in Congress. They could arrest these banksters.
Yeah, of course, you know? But they pay their paychecks. And they've been indoctrinated into thinking that their real job is to follow the letter of the law when it's to protect and serve. It's not to follow the letter of the law, because then criminals can make the laws and you're obligated to follow them like the robots you've become doing your job. And it just can't – this status quo is unmaintainable. So you're going to have to choose police officers, law enforcement, and especially our military. Do you side with people that are in your community that actually care about this country, or people that want to strip mine it for everything it's worth, start a war with China, and then go on to the next country? Because that's what it's coming down to real quick here. If they're going to arrest a firefighter, come on.
It's just like – I don't know, man. It's just – it's insane.
It's lunacy.
And then, so then, just maybe an hour ago, I was on my way here, and I was right down the street, and I just see these helicopters coming through in attack formation, going full speed, man, like just barely overhead, right, flying like right over my place, and I don't know, man. It was weird. It was just I've never seen anything like it. You know, six helicopters flying like directly over my house. Matter of fact, I hear one outside right now.
Yeah, right now.
It's as if we live like right over top of like a helicopter highway or something here, which I just don't remember it being that way. But anyway, it's like when does this stuff stop? When did we start saying, look, you guys are violating our privacy by flying over our properties like that? I mean, where can we stop this stuff? I mean, the drones are being implemented like crazy, but I mean, let's face it, we've already gone and accepted the helicopters that people are going to be flying helicopters over our houses nonstop, and no one even seems to mind anymore.
I think we have to draw a line in the sand at the human element being taken out. I think if we allow drones with people sitting in boxes and then eventually just letting them fly autonomously following algorithms, that's where we got to say that cannot happen over our country, period. We require, if something's being flown, a human being is behind the controls. That way there's culpability for something if something happens. You can't just go, oh, a drone flew over and it shot a hellfire into a group of protesters, but it was a malfunction, or it got hacked by a terrorist cell or some other bullshit. And that's what's going to come when this thing, it turns into this pilotless skies that they want. We cannot allow that to happen, or else we're going to allow Terminator, the movie, to come true. But it's not going to be machines wiping us out. It's going to be people using machines to wipe out the rest of us.
I mean, let's put it this way. If you think cops are bad right now, imagine cops with zero conscience, because right now there's still a good amount of the cops in there that have a conscience. Now, this isn't science fiction. There were just these reports coming out about these RoboCop, basically, Android things that they're coming out with. And, you know, it's RoboCop's not out of the, you know, it's not out of the question. Clone armies aren't out of the question. You know, I think that stuff is what we're going to be seeing in the next 10, you know. Yeah. 10, 15 years, it's dangerous times, man. And it's already expected to be, there's already expected to be like 30,000 drones flying over U.S. skies by 2020.
Well, that's what they have already right now. So I'm sure they're ramping up production, because they know if we ever get into a major, major war, we're going to need all those drones. So they're definitely got to be in the several hundreds of thousands at this point.
It's almost like these guys watched the movie Terminator and watched it and thought, like, well, that's actually a good idea.
It is. It's a great idea.
Let's make a whole drone robot army and see how that works out.
And it's a great idea for you if you're one of those people, but not if you're anybody else that's not into this super exclusive secret club inner circle that nobody is. And, you know,
nobody that you know is part of that club.
No. Nobody any of us know is part of that club. So the thing is, you know, they're going to just kind of look at us like cattle and kind of brand us, and we're no longer useful. They're going to liquidate us, and that's going to be the fate of humanity. It's going to go out, you know, with a whimper if we don't do something about it. You know, we're just going to let these aristocracies continue their power structure, and it doesn't serve anyone at this point.
Yeah, you know, and you know, as we kind of just move right into this next thing, which is, I mean, it's all too apparent now with all this other stuff that we're seeing, all this stuff we're talking about. We talked extensively about Wall Street on Monday. If you guys want to hear about Wall Street, go back to in the archives right there and listen to last week's show. But anyway, you know, there's these four bankers that killed themselves in the last, like, week, basically. And then that kind of preceded this stock market start, you know, we started seeing the quote-unquote correction. And, I mean, with all these states, I mean, what do we have? At least 25 states right now that are in a state of emergency. You know, we got the whole West Coast in this massive drought. I mean, there's just all these things brewing up here. And now the latest thing, and again, this is like, you would think that this stuff isn't actually being said, you know, but this is on record. Supreme Court Justice Scalia, which I'm sure most of you guys have heard of him, he's a pretty influential Supreme Court judge. He's been there for a pretty long time, too. He basically went on record saying that he would not be surprised if they reopened the internment camps, like the ones that we had during World War II for the Japanese. This guy was just on record this week saying that.
Right. There was a report that came out that there was something like 8 million names of Americans that they figured would fill these internment camps. These are political dissidents, essentially, or people they consider threats to national security and the interests of whoever's in power at the time. And, you know, I'm sure it's me and you, everybody listening, and all kinds of other people that we don't, you know, even assume are threats. They're going to look at anybody that could be a potential threat and try to throw them into these things. You know, they haven't built. These are FEMA camps. There's different kinds of camps, but there's definitely those for dissidents. And they've been saying forever they're going to have re-education programs, a.k.a. brainwashing and blah, 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 blah. So the thing is this, man. If it gets to the point where we can't talk about the things going on and trying to prevent them, and we're going to live in a society where that's illegal, just let it be over. Like, we need to fight to keep what we have and get back to the due process and constitutional government we have. Otherwise, just go down fighting for it. Because you're not going to want to live in what they have planned and cooked up. It's going to be a literal internment camp worldwide. That's what it's looking like.
Well, you know, exactly, man. It's we really are in this sort of opening stages of the new fascism, I think. And, you know, it seems so far-fetched that this country can get to that point. But the fact is that these people are saying these things, and we see the DHS buying all these armored vehicles and buying billions of rounds of ammunition. These are domestic agencies. Why do they need a billion rounds of ammunition? You know, this, none of this stuff sounds good.
It's every all, agency it's, too. It's the it's, postal the postal service today. It came out that they ordered 200,000 rounds for sidearms, particularly, you know, semi-automatic 45s and 9mm because they want postal workers strapped. What in the heck? You know, where are we getting to the point where everybody that has – they're not even a federal agency. They're, again, like the IRS, a private corporation. So why are we as taxpayers paying to arm private corporations? Would you be okay if your money went to arm the truck driver for Pepsi? I don't think you would. So why are we, you know, even allowing this to go without batting an eye? And they're arming them up, and these are just regular Joes, so they're not going to be fighting us, you'd assume. So what are they planning for? That's what I want to know, because DHS, I get, they'll use it on us. The post office, postal service guy that delivers your mail is not going to go cap a bunch of people for Uncle Sam. That's not him. So I think what they're doing is it's like they're just arming us to the teeth for what are we going to do so we can pull ourselves apart? I mean, is this really the only thing? Because we're invade proof. No one's coming
well,
in. So
I mean, let's see. I mean, the only reason why they would want to arm postal service is if they expected in the near future a situation where it was so desperate that postal service were being robbed on the regular.
Okay, well then I guess
and that's their that you know that's the deterrent.
All right, so that makes a lot
so
of sense.
So I mean I guess you could say the government does believe in guns as a deterrent, huh?
Well, the thing is, it makes a lot of sense now because there's a financial analyst, Terry Burnham, who just took out $1 million he had in a checking account in B of A and said, if you have it in any multinational bank, pull it out immediately, throw it into local credit, you know, unions and things of that sort. But generally, just don't even have a lot of cash. Have everything divested. He's like saying Federal Reserve notes are worthless. They're not even worth the paper they're printed on at this point. So yeah, you're right, Nick. They'll be a target because God forbid somebody's sending Johnny $20 for his birthday in that card. They want the $20 Federal Reserve notes so they can go buy a loaf of bread. I mean, this is where it may get to at this point. And, you know, with the environmental concerns going on now and the poverty going on, I mean, I think we're going to get into it, but we're seeing that there's these three grids at risk that are covering 61 million Americans. If you can imagine that, something happening to one of those grids with 10, 15 million people out of power, it's going to be a major, major issue there.
So we talked about these all these states, right, that are in a state of emergency. A lot of it is supposedly due to propane shortage, which, you know, in the past we've seen it here in California where we had our energy manipulated just so they can rip us off, which is why our governor got impeached, recalled or whatever,
right.
A few years ago. I don't know, what was that, 8 years ago or so, whatever. I still remember, even though I was a kid at the time.
Right.
But, you know, there's a chance that there's this at least 25 states that are on this propane shortage. There's a chance that it's part of some kind of energy manipulation. Now, the thing is that doesn't help at all is all this cold weather, you know, all these polar vortexes or whatever it is that these things are going on. Let's face it, there's some extreme cold weather happening in the U.S. But like you were saying, the one part of the story that people don't talk about, it's the heat going on the other side of the world.
Yeah, I mean, they're having some major record-breaking kind of parched summers in Australia, even Chile, which is usually pretty temperate. Brazil is extremely hot. If you look online, Brazil had some of the most interesting flooding down major streets where people were surfing in the middle of towns because the tides were coming in constantly, and there were people that have pictures of alligators swimming next to their car in big feet of water. I mean, it's literally one of the craziest type India type of monsoons I've seen in Brazil. They haven't had something happen like that in a while, and it's just extremes everywhere. It's extreme cold. You know, me and you are really lucky where we live, where right now it's like 50 something, and we're complaining about it, and it's negative 56 in Duluth the other day, and probably I don't even know what you can step outside even bundled up for in that, like 2 minutes probably. But yeah, it's just crazy extremes. They don't know what it is. Global warming, mini ice age, global weirding, poles flipping, nobody knows. Not really. There's no consensus. The only consensus is the BS global warming corporate consensus. I don't believe that at all. So,
well, it's, you know, it's probably a couple of things. You know, partially man-made, partially part of the natural cycle, and I think a big part of it, of course, has to do with the sun and the unpredictability of the, you know, what the sun's going to do. And I think that really has a huge effect on our weather. So, I mean, it's really hard to explain. I mean, you know, I don't think there's one way of going about it. But what's clear right now to me is that with all these, you know, when you end up in these shortages, it's already coming in California. Let's face it, they only lifted the restriction last year, I believe. But they put down these really strict Orwellian laws on your water usage out here, where if you get caught, like they're encouraging neighbors to snitch on their other neighbors if they catch you watering your lawn during the daytime. Yeah, having a lawn isn't – I mean, it would be a lot better if you had a garden that grew food instead of having a lawn. But still, they're trying to get neighbors to snitch on their other neighbors. And I think they were even offering some kind of like bounty. At a certain point, it's like if you snitch on someone and they get caught, you get like $100 rebate or something
from the EPA.
You get like $100 rebate on your electric bill or on your water bill or something.
Dumb.
And this stuff was happening, and I think they're about to bring it back because they just did away with it about a year ago. So I'm pretty sure it's going to come back. Now out here we got the water shortage. So I mean, I don't know what it is that you can do to find more water. Like we talked about on Monday, this solar still is pretty cool. You guys can look this up on YouTube or look it up on WeSupportOrganic.com. I just posted it a few – I think I posted it like today or yesterday. But it's basically this box. You can make it pretty cheap with a transparent lid, and it basically like distills water using the sun heat, the heat from the sun. And then it just and it evaporates and it condenses into this you know, other bucket, and you can use it. Desalination is another way, but besides just here with the water, look at the Northeast. I mean, this is just another example of times when we need to have other solutions in place rather than relying on the big grid. How many people were relying on that grid?
61 million people relied on three grids. I guess probably Bowash is one, which is the Northeast, and then you had the Midwest and the South. I mean, these are the original electrical grids when we had what they were calling Edison's lamp. You know, they replaced the whale oil lamps and they made the copper wire old school grid. And this was after the 1861 solar flare that pretty much knocked out all of the telecommunications at the time, which was just you know, telegraphs. So all it did was fry out a few things, and they're like, oh, but all our telegraph machines don't work. They're all just build new ones. So it didn't really do anything. But, you know, if something like that were to hit today, it'd be catastrophic. So you have these three ancient 1880s, 1890s type dinosaur setups, man. They're very susceptible to completely caving in, and the EMP would take them out with a viciousness. Like, they've always theorized that World War III type situation happened. You knock out the eastern seaboard and all that with just a few EMPs because it's just chain reaction.
Yeah, and what's happening right now is because of all this weather. There's an extreme stress on this grid, and this grid could literally collapse. It could just get overworked, and a bunch of parts of it can just stop working for a long time. You know, we're talking a couple weeks, maybe a month, if a big, you know, some big damage happens. And so, you know, 60 million people, you know, that's not something that's not a mess that you really want to be caught in.
No.
You don't want to, if at all possible, you know, make some precautions for that if you're in that area. You know?
Most people are prepared, you know, but the thing that made news was it was the South, and it was the Deep South getting hit with this sleety, you know, chemtrail snow. It wasn't melting. It was super slick. People were driving out and flying all over the roads. I mean, did you see the video recently, which was in Minnesota, where they're very used to driving in the snow, and this snow is not melting. It's making this black, or should we say, I think the new play on words is frack ice, because it's just pollution ice. It's like, it doesn't melt. It kind of makes the road slick because it's oily, carbony, liquidy crap, and it just kind of bonds to the asphalt. And even people where they have 4x4s and snow tires, they're flying all over the place.
Yeah, man, it's weird. I saw a bunch of conflicting reports about that. You know, I saw, like, the snow not burning, and I thought it was weird looking myself when I watched the video. And then a bunch of people were saying that it was just melting back into the snow. A bunch of people saying it was sublimation, and then there was some chemists coming out and saying, oh, this isn't normal. I don't know what the hell it is. I mean, I don't know. It's just really weird. Whatever that stuff is, I mean.
Well, I mean, listen, we're going to find out what it is, because you're going to have, you know, the homeless population, which is already at great risk, will visit emergency rooms with exposure-type symptoms if it is this garbagey stuff in the snow and they were around it when they weren't inside warm homes, you know, staying away from this stuff. You know, that's going to be the first line that we'll see what this stuff really is and how it's affecting people. You know, when they're finding, like, things like Morgellons in Chicken McNuggets, I'm pretty sure they can put that any kind of nano crap in snow. So, you know, it's just not that far-fetched.
Yeah, man. It's probably has to do with the pollution. I mean, and now they're ramming through this Keystone Pipeline thing, it seems like. We just had a bunch of these liberal, quote-unquote liberal news stations like MSNBC flip-flopping, and now they're all fully in support of the Keystone Pipeline. And, I mean, they're running the commercials like crazy on CNN, MSNBC, all these channels. And they're, you know, they're trying to just ram this thing through. I mean, let's face it, it's the money, the money and the backing that are changing the opinions. I mean, these figureheads at MSNBC and CNN, they don't really have opinions. They just sit there and read whatever is spoon-fed into the teleprompter, and then they say all the time I hear these people saying, in my opinion, and it's like, no, like, you're lying right now, because you're saying that in your opinion this, that, and the other thing. When in fact, whatever it is your opinion is saying, it was written by somebody else. That's not even your opinion, dude. You know, so in fact, they're just sitting there lying to us. They're basically just mouthpiece. They're just actors, you know.
That's all they are. And I wish people could kind of counter brainwash themselves and start to look at the news and CNN, MSNBC, and everything like that, like just a gigantic act. That's all it is, a big play. The thing with Keystone XL is that it's got so many different things to it that are misleading, and it was never about jobs, okay? Jobs are only going to make maybe at most 20,000 jobs. That's just not worth it. You're just feeding a bigger beast. You're feeding a $5 trillion industry, $5 trillion a year industry, you know, buoyed by thousands and thousands of lobbyists. And pretty much, in a sense, what you're doing is you're ruining Canada's environment. You're putting fresh water at risk for not only them but also us, because the Great Lakes are very, very close to all that stuff. And you're shipping it down this horrible pipeline right to China, and they burn it, and they're about to just completely wreck their own environment.
Well, they're probably going to refine it in Texas, which is really going to screw us. Now, one of the other things, in my opinion, the worst part of this whole thing, besides the whole environmental impact and all that, is the fact that they're just using eminent domain to rob this land. Okay, and a lot of this land is coming from it has to go over native lands. You know, and look what we've already done to the natives. Are we seriously going to do it again just because we want to extract some oil? We're going to commit another apartheid type situation just because we want to extract some oil? Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I mean, it's as if we've already forgot what we've done to the Native Americans, which is like millions and millions of of people killed or you know, displaced. I mean, millions and millions of people were displaced by the by our ancestors or any of us that have American ancestors. And now we're just going to go ahead and do it again. It just doesn't make any sense. It's just such a huge slap in the face.
And the crazy thing about it is if you think about the scope and the raw numbers of it, it's going to go through six different states. It's 2,000 miles long. So if it leaked anywhere pushing 900, I don't know how many gallons of oil a day it's going to push. I think they said it was like 900,000 barrels a day are going to be pushed through this pipeline. And it's sludgy, garbagey, non-sweet, crude, the most disgusting kind of oil that's going to need heavy refining. If it leaks anywhere, it's going to instantly make anything a Superfund site it touches with massive cleanup needed. And where are the profits really going to go? I mean, are Canadian citizens hurting for quality of life or standard of living? Nope. So they're mortgaging their own energy security and future to appease, well, let's face it, the real masters of the whipping boys of the West, dude, China. They have to have that oil or else they can't keep their own garbagey economy humming along and making crappy products.
And, you know, here's another thing about the media when it comes to this whole thing. I don't know if you've noticed, but there was that big oil pipeline that burst last year in 2013, and that it was blacked out in the media. They won't touch pipeline accidents. The media wants to act like there is no safety concern with oil pipelines, and there's no environmental impact. And so what they do is they just ignore any story about any time there's a trouble with a pipeline, they just ignore it. And just assume that people are going to not stop thinking about it and stop worrying about it.
Yeah.
Because they've been trying to grease the skids for this Keystone pipeline for the past, you know, couple years.
Yeah. It's just simply a transfer of wealth on debt owed. That's all it is. People need to understand that their health, their environment are all being put at risk and actually just being completely negatively affected simply because the Western banking powers that are awful at playing their own game and keep betting on awful derivatives and losing trillions of your dollars have to pay China back with things they want, like oil. And after they suck all the oil out, then they're going to want land. See, they want tangible assets, and they're willing to use the 10-million-man army as a threat. That's really what it comes down to. There's no other reason why we'd hemorrhage off oil to them if it wasn't because it was staving off World War III. That's
just
the only
just
thing.
Just imagine if China ever had a draft.
Oh, I mean, you're talking about you could probably field a 500-million-man military if you had to. I mean, there's more single men in China than there are people in America. So think about that for a second. I mean, that's what we're looking at. So you got to feed the giant. You got to feed the dragon. Keep it full. Otherwise, it's going to come try to gobble up what it thinks it belongs to. And their debt is absolutely atrociously
enormous. No, the problem is the more you feed the dragon, the bigger it gets.
That's the biggest issue.
And so if we do sell them all this oil, and then they're going to keep building up this this appetite for this oil, and then what happens when something changes? Then they're like us. Well, they've got the same kind of, you know, it's only a matter of, you know, 10-15 years from now when China is spending as much on their military budgets as we are.
Yeah, probably more because they have more people.
And then the arms race is going to be back on.
Right.
Because Russia's just been kind of Russia's sitting on all this technology, but they've they just don't have the budget that we do.
I wouldn't say that. Everybody thinks Russia isn't wealthy, but they're sitting on top of massive resources. But they have a bigger resource base than any other country in the world. The problem is it's in Siberia and it's tough to get. But they have it. They have the technology to get it. Like, I would say they're the second richest country in the world, honestly. When you think about what they actually own and the technology they have and the wealth of people they have, China's really close, but I still think it's U.S., Russia, China, if it really came down to it. So you're not talking about a poor country. It's a facade, if anything, because the mafia controls everything, and you're talking about the most billionaires anywhere in Moscow.
Yeah, I mean, look at Vladimir Putin himself. I mean, he's the richest.
70 billion.
He's worth 70 billion. He's the richest world leader. So yeah, they, you know, same thing. They got a bunch of poor people, but then they, at the same time, they got a bunch, you know, quite a few billionaires.
But they have a lot of poor people, but they also have a very burgeoned middle class and a technical class. A lot of people have very advanced degrees, and they can work online and do their stuff, you know, wherever. So yeah, there's a lot of poor Russian people. Don't get me wrong, but their middle class is pretty stable. It's always probably going to be right around where it's at. It's not going to shrink. I mean, they're a stable country. They're a country that's bonded by, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years of identity. Not that we're not, but I mean, we've always been the melting pot. So it's, you know, every man for himself in America. That's our economy.
Yeah, but I mean, in the end, it's just another. It's just another. The same structure,
yeah.
You know, and it's got a few billionaires that control basically everything, you know, a middle class and then a poor class, you know, and that's just how it is. And the middle class and the poor class just keep getting closer and closer to becoming the same thing, you know, because they've got the same problems we've got. They've got their own banksters and their own mafia, banking cartels and all that stuff.
They just do it openly.
I mean, their own leader, former KGB, I mean, he's definitely part of it. He's one of the richest guys in the country.
Well, the KGB became the mafia. That's how it worked out there, that when the Berlin Wall fell and suddenly the government didn't have any budget, but there was still this gigantic amount of resources and skills and all these smart people in Russia, well, it just went to this black market type capitalism where strong men went and took stuff. You had ex-generals going in and grabbing oil fields and becoming billionaires with their troops. That was how things worked. There are still nuclear weapons in the Caucasus. They don't know where the hell everything is that they had. I mean, when they transferred back everything from the Ukraine, a lot of stuff went missing. So that's the way the fall went. The fall was organized and it was orchestrated.
Ukraine got really quiet all of a sudden. And, I mean, I think we can kind of assume why.
Well, they took the deal Putin gave them. $15 billion is a lot of money. You can grease the wheels on a long, long gravy train with $15 billion in the Ukraine. That'd be like having $100 billion in the U.S. I mean, that's going to go real far. So they got it done. The people are still protesting. They're using medieval tactics like shooting them with trash-filled catapults, and they're all gas-masked up, and they still want to fight. I mean, these Ukrainian protesters are a crazy bunch. If we had a bunch of those dudes in this country, well, maybe things would get started.
But, you know, I guess apparently the prime minister resigned or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, probably what we're going to see is it just cooled back off over there. And in the end, we're going to see another dude get swept into office that's probably going to be from the other end of the political spectrum.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to it, all in all, same exact thing that was before. Except now another side of the population likes the people in power and the other side hates them.
Well, I mean, a very vocal portion of the population wants to go with the EU, okay? They feel like a cultural identity is European, even if it is Far Eastern European. They don't want to be under some kind of Soviet umbrella. Even if it is in name only, they just don't want to be swept over like Georgia was just because they disagreed with Russia. They want to have Europe back them. They want to be part of this missile shield. They want to control their own destiny more than they have. And they want to be Ukrainian, not a Russian puppet vassal state. But it looks like that's not going to work. They're going to stay in the sphere of influence, so they say, because money talks.
And you know, Ukraine has always been like one of the bastions of the economy in that area, man. They got all the industry right there.
Well, it's the bread bowl of Eastern Europe, and they grow this black bread that's really hearty, and you can feed, geez, I don't know, probably 100 million people with the food that comes out of just that country. So they really need them for the food even. They need to feed Russians with Ukrainian food. And it's just a very important thing to stay under their control. And Odessa is a very important port. There's just a lot of very, you know, good reasons why they did what they did, because they can't keep losing all these puppet states. They can't lose Syria. They can't give way. You know?
Yeah, and I mean, it'd be foolish to think that the Cold War ended. I mean, let's face it, it's still continuing on.
Of course.
And if you look at, if you think that we're running some type of Orwellian fashion, which I do, we can probably assume that all these, all this Cold War, you know, militarism and arms races, in the end, when it comes down to it, it's basically just theater. Why? Because it's making these dudes rich. They're able to bully down on anybody else that's third world, you know, anyone not part of the inner core of people that run, you know, most of the globe, you know, anyone like a country like, for instance, Chile, like we did in Chile, or like we did in Nicaragua, or like we did in Libya. Anytime there's somebody like that, well, guess what? We got all the weapons from all this Cold War buildup. We've got this huge amount of technology. Okay, cool. Let's just go batter down a few countries whenever the hell we want. Whenever the hell they want to – if they ever give us any economic problems, they ever want to get off the dollar, they ever want to nationalize their oil fields or anything like that, just go batter them down like a battering ram.
Absolutely. It's always – it never ceases to amaze me how private interests can be furthered with the public's acquiescence. Like we're blindly following people. Like, okay, well, it's for national security reasons that we went ahead and did what we did. But guess what? It didn't stop anything. People are still dying at an even greater rate. Maybe not in your community yet, but whatever happens there will happen here because of a golden rule called blowback. There's no way to deny it. You cannot screen out and stop everybody that will be coming back that lost their families from our policies. They will – they'll do what they can to get to us. So – you know, this buildup's all for naught. We saw it with the Super Bowl, of all things, where the guy got on the podium. We're going to see it in Sochi, where somebody will do something regardless of $50 billion spent on security, because you can't spend away the world's problems. You can't insulate yourself with security just from money. There's not enough men in the world with suits and guns to surround you.
You'd have to build the walls with money.
So it's just a false sense of security to keep the hapless dimwits in the dark, thinking that they can go to these big events, getting them lulled into this kind of panacea, and then boom, Boston bombing, boom, whatever, any false flag. And then guess what? We're going to go into the Caucasus, and anything can be spread into a World War III type thing now.
Well, let's look at it like this. If you look back at what started World War One, and if you think that these people like to go in some sort of patterns and stuff like that, believe me, these people like to go in patterns. I mean, look what started World War One. It was started in the Caucasus by a single gunshot.
Yep.
World War One, boom. One gunshot started World War One. Now, who knows what's going to happen in the Olympics, but let's face it, the mainstream media are greasing the skids once again. Every other thing they say about the Olympics, they don't say nothing about the Olympics except for, is there going to be a terrorist attack, terror threat at the Olympics? The Black Widows may already be inside, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like,
or there was a hilarious one today in the Washington Post, which was basically coming up with every complaint made on Twitter by a journalist about how horrible the facilities in Sochi are. There's no running water. I couldn't flush. The breakfast is subpar. The cantaloupe was frozen. You know what I mean? So there's nothing of importance going on.
I thought the Olympics was not about like luxury. It was about getting all these countries together, which many of which are third world, which don't even know what frozen cantaloupe is.
And they don't even know what half of the companies that are corporately sponsoring them are, because they don't sell goods in their countries because they don't have any money. So you see, it's just more and more and more of bread and circus. It takes it to the extreme. The World Cup, the Super Bowl, the Olympics. There are just more and more ways where they convince you we are one, and then they break you down into that same monotone, robotic, stiff they want you to be, going back to your cubicle at work and buying all the same shitty products worldwide. That's what they want. The Olympics spearhead it under the most innocent of all things, which is sport. And then they make it into a competition, which further, instead of bringing us together, divides us. So you see how it works. It's always like a double play.
Nationalism.
Oh, yeah. Nationalism is the best thing to use to kill a bunch of people, and then once all those idiots are done dying, we're all one people and all one world and all one government and all one religion.
Nationalism is the most well, you got nationalism and democracy are the two most common terms or ideas to be used to stampede people into a herd and make them do dumb things. And this kind of goes all the way back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show with Justice Scalia and what he actually said when he was at this college in Hawaii, or he was talking to some law students in Hawaii or something. I think he was at a college. But he basically said, he used a Latin term. I don't know the Latin term because I don't speak Latin. But basically what he said was, during a time of panic, the laws basically get thrown to the wayside, you know, and the laws become irrelevant. That's what he was saying, what happened. Basically, that was his excuse for what happened during World War II when they created the internment of the Japanese, the internment camps to house all the Japanese. And that's what he said. That's why it happened because, yeah, it was the wrong thing to do. But in a time of panic like that, the laws just get thrown out the window and they just do what popular opinion says.
Right. And the problem with this is that if you're looking back strictly from a strategic point of view, if you're fighting Japan, then if you intern Japanese citizens on one completely racist aspect, you kind of are taking away a threat of some sort. But in the new, and I hate the term, but in the new world order, everybody is an enemy combatant if you don't agree with the government and powers that be. Period. You're a dissident. You're a threat. You're a terrorist. You may be put into these camps. It may be a point where any of us listening may be put into one of these camps, and they may try to re-educate us. And then we can, of course, pull a number on our own captors and re-educate them, right? Isn't that the goal? But this stuff's happening, man, and he's saying it's coming. He's trying to tell us because they're still good people. I mean, I'm not saying Antonin Scalia is a good guy because he's a Supreme Court justice, so obviously he's a corporate lackey. But something in his heart made him make a misstep, or somebody allowed him to say that to psychologically prepare people for what's coming, because they're built, you know, the trucks are there, the barbed wire's turned in, the requisitions are already made, the contractors are already found. The food's stockpiled and the water's ready to go, and so are all the biological viruses.
I mean, look at Red Dawn, man. And if you look at what they did there, the camps there, where they just used the school. I mean, anything could be turned into a center to house people, a refugee center, a government-controlled refugee center, as long as it's got a fence built around it. Now, what do all the schools have built around them nowadays? Huge 8-foot to 10-foot fences. I know all the schools around this area do, you know, so I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they just, if there ever was a situation, you know, the schools can be turned, you know, the administrative buildings can be turned.
You know, these are called Freudian slips. And what I think actually, because everybody on the Supreme Court probably is already microchipped and brain scanned, and they probably are controlled completely. Somebody who is Antonin Scalia's handler was authorized or took it upon himself to allow this Freudian slip out, because a lot of people don't even believe in FEMA camps. They can't get it through their head that there are evil, evil people within the circles of power, and they want them gone because they're sucking up resources and they're a threat to their own power structure. And that's what these things are. And whoever allowed Scalia to say this stuff, I mean, hey, kudos to you, whoever you are. Somebody's fighting for us on the inside and allowed this slip to happen, and this is going to be just like the 9/11 investigate guy. When a justice of the Supreme Court says these camps that we already have built can be used again and will be used again, people need to wake up.
Yeah, it's pretty scary, man. And you know, just to be sure, fascism isn't racist. You know, by definition, it's not. I mean, yeah, the Nazis used racism in their efforts, but obviously the Nazi efforts failed. So, you know, the new fascism isn't about the color of your skin. It's not about your religion. It's about these guys already have a mental picture of who you are just based on your online activities, and that's probably going to account for, you know, they probably already got a profile on about 98% of the population, if not more, because they even – they're, you know, I know we've all got a friend that has never used Facebook that said, you know what, I'm not going to use Facebook, okay? But guess what? I mean, there was an article came out a couple months ago that even if you don't have Facebook, if you're a contact in somebody's phone, if your phone number is in somebody's phone under your name, Facebook is able to access that information through their app, and they build a profile around you even though you've never even had a Facebook account.
Yep, you don't
so
need
to
one.
Think that the NSA isn't building a profile for every single one of us that's basically saying, okay, you know, based on probability, this person is going to be a issue. You know, so you know, they say that there's a list with already 8 million people on it, and the list could – who knows the number? It could be even a lot higher by now. I think that number was coming from like 2008.
And there's always been reports that they divide them between black, red, and blue, and there's certain people that they're going to just do away with. Others they're going to re-educate, and then other people they consider to be turnable. So it's culture war, man. It's culture war from us first spreading out. We always like to use the octopus and the tentacle analogy because it's really what it is. It's going to be turned – this security apparatus, the so-called security and war apparatus, will be turned inward to crush all dissent from within, and then it'll be unleashed in all its glory on the rest of the world. That's the plan. The subjugation of the human race through overwhelming military technology. The stuff we've seen is nothing to what they have. I'm talking about things that are probably 100, 200 years ahead of whatever we think we got. They got it. They won't let us know because then they lose the element of surprise and all that other good stuff. But, you know, we were talking earlier about how the F-35 is the most wasteful military project ever, $1 trillion down the drain and counting because we can't even have one up in the air yet. That's probably nothing compared to what they've spent on all kinds of things they have right now. You know, so that's just basically what I think is going to happen soon. This is the plan all along.
Well, there's another bit of news that came out. I believe it came out today about J.P. Morgan. And apparently on the books – now let's just be I just want to be a little clear on this. I in my opinion, you know, what's reported on the books is one thing, and there's probably people with hordes of gold and silver that are off the books that nobody really knows where it's at. It's probably on an island somewhere that's seemingly abandoned, and you can only get there on a ship or whatever. But on the books, J.P. Morgan now holds the highest amount of silver in history.
Yep.
Physical silver
in
their vaults.
In anything that's not a government, like a governmental mint of some sort or a Fort Knox type thing, as a private corporation that they now own within their own warehouses, more physical silver ounces than any other private institution, and they went ahead and hedged against it too. So basically, what that says is, if the dollar collapses, they good. And if silver collapses, they're good. So they're not going anywhere. In fact, once this bubble does finally burst and they're hedged either way, they're going to become probably one of the top, if not the top, worldwide banks. And maybe if you're looking at a candidate for the One World Bank and the Global Bank to go along with the global government, maybe Morgan won it out.
Well, the way I see it is now we know what vaults to go to when things go down. So grab a couple,
if you can find them.
Couple hundred tons of gold, silver.
They're definitely not going to be in the U.S.
Now, one thing I know, we talked about the banksters committing suicide, the stock market on the quote unquote correction mode, which who knows? I don't know, but just last week there was another report that J.P. Morgan had a f load of gold taken out of their vaults. You know, did you remember that story? Somebody pulled out the biggest extraction of gold, like ever.
Right.
And now all of a sudden they have the biggest amount of silver, you know, which is, you know, whether it's coincidental, which I doubt, you know, these kind of things aren't, a lot of this, most of the time this stuff isn't just coincidence, you know, so in some way or another, this may be tied in here. I don't know, you know.
Yeah. I mean, this is what, if you look back at history, proceed to bank run. You're going to have a withdrawal and consolidation of real physical tangible assets that have always been denoted as wealth carrying, silver, gold, platinum, copper. Things of that nature will be stockpiled by those with real wealth now and real assets. And they're going to be hedged against the collapse of the dollar, and they're going to also be hedged for the ascent of the petro yuan, because, you know, China's the biggest reason why JP Morgan had to acquire so much silver is that they were doing so many of their own shenanigans and buying up so much silver. COMEX was in China. So that's the biggest issue, man, is these big banks know that pretty soon anything you got in your wallet ain't going to be worth wiping your butt with it, because it's just going to have zero value. And they want to protect not only their clients, but themselves as well.
And I mean, who wants, honestly, who wants to be using a currency that is being controlled by a bunch of bureaucrats who wants to use a currency that's being controlled by central bankers?
Let's be real about it. Who wants to use a cotton piece of paper with a Monopoly font on it that can be tracked, that'll store your fingerprint on it, that has cocaine traces on it so they can incriminate you whenever they want? That's not tied to anything of value at all, and that's held together by a secret society ordering the good men and women of our military to go kill innocent people. That's it in a nutshell.
That doesn't sound very appetizing.
So do you want to hold that?
That doesn't sound like an attractive investment. You know, so I think, you know, that's why we're seeing the rise of these cryptocurrencies and these digital currencies. It may be a temporary solution. It may not be. But
it's a start.
It's the foot in the door into the people understanding, look, maybe we don't have to rely on the dollar as the monopoly currency for everything we do. Maybe we can have a cryptocurrency for all of our digital transactions.
We can.
Let's just say maybe for all of our internet purchases we use crypto. And then when it comes to real life situations, we form some other kind of more physical type of currency that we can actually put our hands on. Maybe like we talked about before, farm backed currency, crop backed currency, metallic, you know, bimetallic, trimetallic backed currencies. I mean, the whole idea is to have competing ideas. You know, you don't want to just say, okay, now from now on, 99% of the people are going to use Bitcoin. Guess what? Then you're going to run into the same problem.
Right. Let's have a variety of different ways.
We just need to have not so many laws that restrict us, telling us, oh, you can't use this for currency. Because, you know, now if you get caught, there's some states where if you get caught using gold trying to use gold for currency, you could actually be arrested. You know, if you decide to accept gold at your store, like, you could actually be arrested for that in some states. You know, there I've seen stories of it.
Which I find is hilarious, because if you were to go purchase a car or a home – and go to a bank and provide physical gold for that note, you could, in order to get an immodial title, you'd get the right receipt and take them to court. And that way you'd never, ever pay taxes, because you actually own it top to bottom. It's not just a title. They're allowing you to use it. So, yeah, man, we're upside down in every which way in this country. You know, the best thing we can do is just keep talking about it, keep waking people up. Make it so it's so mainstream that this investigate 9/11 guy – it's getting play now, and let's bring this back. Let's wake people up again.
Yeah, that guy made waves, big time. Props to you, bro. Again, that was pretty good. You know, and no matter where you stand on the whole 9/11 thing, even the I think Congress even questioned the official report.
Even Pete Carroll, the coach of the Seahawks, said to question.
Yeah, even the coach of the Seahawks, dude. So, I mean, whether you believe it was an inside job or not, at the very least, most people believe that it needs to be investigated. You know, and just like the JFK murder and the Martin Luther King murder, it's the same kind of idea. It's like, okay, maybe you don't believe it's an inside job, But at the same time, you know, there's something missing from the story that we're not being told. And they just declassified this whole Saudi thing, which is
Yo, here we go, go through the stereo.
There was a question.